The board of directors at WeWork is reportedly meeting as soon as today to discuss whether to oust CEO Adam Neumann. There are concerns about some of his personal behavior and the company's finances. There was a huge drop in WeWork's valuation, and the IPO has now been indefinitely delayed. Derek Thompson is senior editor at The Atlantic. He joins us from Washington. Hi, Derek.
Hello, Jamie.
So first, what is happening with this push to get rid of Adam Neumann? Why have the board members soured on him?
I think it's useful to divide WeWork's problems into two categories, Adam Neumann and not Adam Neumann. So in the Adam bucket, we have this tall pile of governance issues and eccentricities, the most egregious to me being the name change. So he forced the company, WeWork, to officially change its name to the We Company. The company says, okay, they can't say no, he controls the company. Then he goes, oh, by the way, I happen to own the rights to the name The We Company, so you have to pay me $6 million for it. So Neumann charged his company, which he controls, $6 million for a name which he owns. It's utterly strange behavior. In the non-Adam Neumann bucket, however, you do have WeWork's financials, as you said. The company's going to lose well over $1 billion this year. It lost $1 billion last year. And it's not clear they have any path to profitability. So in the biggest picture, I think the board is upset not only with the man, but also with the math.
Well, and that sounds a lot to me like Uber under Travis Kalanick when they had a lot of problems with him and his eccentricity and also with the math. Now, just for people who aren't familiar with WeWork, just remind us what the company does and how big is it?
Sure. WeWork leases office buildings all over the world for billions and billions of dollars. Then it transforms them and it rents them to freelancers or to companies. It does this in dozens of countries, new locations opening like every day. The company made $2 billion last year and is growing really quickly. It's a big, important firm. But when it filed for its IPO, it listed its valuation near $50 billion. That number doesn't make any sense. This is a real estate and office space company, and it's asking investors to consider it a tech monopoly. It's not a tech company, and it's not a monopoly. And that's why this IPO has been such a mess. It's the gap between how this company saw itself in private markets and how public markets consider it.
You actually called it part of a great unicorn delusion. What do you mean by that?
Unicorns are billion-dollar private companies. And these companies, in a weird way, I have sympathy for them. They're stuck between two worlds. As private companies, they raise all this money with inflated visions of planetary conquest. And they get all of this money from private investors. And then when they turn public, all that money that they're spending on conquering the planet appears on profit and loss statements as losses. And so the public sees this company that in the private sector was this glorified story, and all they see is a company that's spending money willy-nilly and has no path to profit. So the great unicorn delusion is the delusion that the private sector story hour can go on forever. It can't. You can bewitch a bank, you can bewitch a billionaire or a fund, but public markets have pessimists, and it's very difficult to bewitch a pessimist.
Okay, Derek, I have to quote you back to you because this is one of my favorite quotes in recent days. I saw it on Twitter the other day. You write, "If you wake up on a Casper mattress, hail a Lyft to get to your desk at WeWork, use DoorDash to order lunch to the office, hail another Lyft home, and have Uber Eats bring you dinner, you've spent your entire day interacting with companies that will collectively lose nearly $13 billion this year." Mm-hmm. Why are all these companies that we talk about so much losing so much money?
Because of the great unicorn delusion. These companies, Lyft and Uber and WeWork and DoorDash, they're not just trying to be the biggest ride-hailing company or food delivery company in Austin or San Francisco. They want to conquer the world. Planetary conquest takes a lot of money. It takes tens of billions of dollars. So they're getting all of this money from investors. But when you spend that on an annualized basis, all of the spending just looks to the public markets like losses. So when they move from the private sector, where they can be valued at, you know, whatever SoftBank or some other investor wants to be valued at, when they move into public markets and they have to release SEC validated information to the public looks at this and they're like, wait a minute, planetary conquest is expensive. This isn't a business. This is a land war in Asia. You're going to bleed money forever. And as a result, the valuations come crashing down to earth.
Did the giants of today, and I'm thinking of Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, did they all lose money like this and falsify their promise at the beginning, just like these companies, you say, are?
That is a great question. I think I would answer it like this. Most of the world's biggest companies start off losing money, but not all companies that start off losing money become the world's biggest companies, right? That is the fallacy at the heart of this idea that if you just lard up an investor vision or a founder vision with tens of billions of dollars, you inevitably create the next Amazon. You don't. Jeff Bezos is a one-of-a-kind genius. That kind of magic just can't be recreated with billions of dollars in investment money. We're in a period right now, as I see it, of enormous private sector investments where investors want to get behind the next Amazon. And the next Amazon just isn't necessarily materializing.
Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic. Thanks as always.
Thank you.